It's June 24th, 2015, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. Kicking off this hour, we'll hear firsthand from organizers of three special events coming up in the next few days. Melly James from the Hawaii Venture Capital Association returns to tell us about tomorrow's Women in Tech panel. Then Dave Ratz from the Maui County Council joins us by phone to tell us about the annual Hawaii State Association of Counties Conference. Then Dave Ulrich from Pacific New Media joins us to fill us in about this weekend's F808 Photo Hawaii Festival.
Finally, after the break, we'll dedicate the rest of the show to explore the resurgence of podcasting. Has the next big thing been going strong all along? We're here to talk to Todd Cochran from Geek News Central and Raw Voice, and of course, Kimi Morton from Hot Better Pop.
From the hit public radio spinoff show Serial to Monday's unprecedented suburban garage interview with President Barack Obama, why are podcasts going mainstream more than a decade after they first hit the net? We'd, of course, love your questions and thoughts as part of this conversation, so be ready to call in or tweet.
And, of course, before we get to that story, we want to talk to Melly James, and she's here from the Hawaii Venture Capital Association, and they got a great panel coming up with Women in Tech. Melly, tell us all about this panel that you got lined up.
Okay, thanks, Bert. Thanks,
Ryan. Woman in tech.
As a woman in yes. tech myself, I am the moderator. We have five fabulous women who will be on the panel tomorrow. First up, we have Beth Carvin, who is the CEO of Knobscot Corporation, which is a company that was previously on Oahu and now on Kauai. And what it does is it's a software that helps large organizations identify and reduce the causes of employee turnover.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got some huge clients like T-Mobile, Toyota, and locally American Savings Bank, Banco, and First Hawaiian are three of her local clients.
That's cool. You know, that's an important thing because, you know, a lot of big companies, they always talk about keeping their employees. And if there's a metric or some mechanism by which they can at least determine how they can, you know, basically keep the good guys, that's important.
Absolutely. So she's flying over from Kauai. We have Christine Lanning, who is the president of the Integrated Systems Technology, and that's a Hawaii-based security systems integrator.
We had Andrew just on a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
The Lannings, yep. Yes.
The Lannings. We also have Nines Faleafine, and she's amazing social strategist and social media strategist who's developed digital media strategies for some of the Hawaii's largest companies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really excited to have her on there. Of course, we have Shanoa Farnsworth, managing director of Blue Startups, who has her hands in all things technology, especially with the technology companies here in Hawaii that we're trying to get funded.
Mm-hmm.
And Via Lid, who is the CEO. I'm sorry, I think she's the COO. CTO of MeetingSift, which is a collaborative meeting productivity platform that actually went through Blue Startups and also Accelerate UH. So those are two University of Hawaii, I think, postgrads.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you've gone to a tech event in the last year, you've probably used and seen the live analytics that comes out of MeetingSift.
Absolutely. We'll be featuring some new features are products, services that MeetingSift has at tomorrow's luncheon. So she's really excited to feature those for the first time.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, women in tech, of course, is a, I don't know if you would call it a buzzword, a movement, something that has certainly been simmering in the tech sector, let alone in businesses in general for quite some time. I would say in the last year, there's been a lot of conversation about it on the national stage, front page of, or the new Newsweek had a whole cover story about it, and really about representation and about equal pay and all of those things. So it seems like an enormous topic to tackle in a luncheon. And it sounds also that you're mostly going to focus on the success stories, the fact that they are forging their way regardless of the challenges put ahead of them.
Yeah, so success stories, but also the challenges that are occurring. And we really do want to, you know, focus on a lot of the challenges unique to women here in technology and in the innovation sector. You know, of course, we could have so many different entrepreneurs and startups on our panel, but the fact that we have five amazing women on the panel, we really also want to do a deeper dive on some of those challenges and opportunities.
Well, you know, I was talking to Bert about it. I mean, it's true that certainly across corporate America, you want to see greater representation of women. But at least in my experience, and maybe I'm just going to the right events and hanging out with the right people in Hawaii, I feel like we have conversations about women-owned businesses quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it's something that's greater percentage or lower percentage in Hawaii. But I mean, I do think that we're seeing progress. So what are some of the, not that we want to give them a cheat sheet, but what are some of the questions you look forward to asking your panelists?
Oh, Ryan, I can't give those up. But I really am excited because, you know, a part of this is really featuring women so that it is something tangible. I can't tell you how many people have emailed me who are coming tomorrow, who are bringing their daughter, mm-hmm. who are bringing, you know, women who are interested in technology, who are still in their forming years, who are coming to the luncheon to really touch and feel and see and hear fabulous women that are doing some great things and be inspired and actually be able to meet these women and know that, you know, you will be successful and you can be successful and to actually see that.
Well, you know, because the just being successful in the tech industry in Hawaii is a challenge in and of itself. And to see some women that are successful in Hawaii, I think, is even a greater example. I mean, is there a key message that you want to try to convey as a result of doing this panel?
That women do it better.
Better than what?
Better than anybody else.
Okay.
Well, I like how you mentioned Beth, the company, sorry, Ms. Beth Carvin, mm-hmm. had a company on Honolulu. When you said they were in Honolulu and you started to say that they had gone somewhere, my mind, kind of fills in Silicon Valley. They went to the West Coast, Austin, Boston. And so you said they moved from Honolulu to Kauai. I think that's a fantastic kind of testament as well to their fortitude to sticking it out in Hawaii and that it's possible to do it in Hawaii.
Yes, absolutely. She's done an incredible job and the company is huge. They have offices all over the United States. She just loves Kauai and is headquartered there.
You can work anywhere you want.
Absolutely.
So the challenge is, you know, if you're trying to do it in Honolulu, I mean, you have the effect of being in the middle of the Pacific, but you're at the Metropolitan Center. I mean, you know, doing it on Kauai is even more challenging. But I think it's testament to the fact that if you can do it anywhere, that's what you want to do. You want to get to the places where you want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this panel is going to be very interesting.
I think so. If somebody wants to attend, and I think many people should.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? When is it happening and how do you get in?
Absolutely. It's tomorrow, Thursday, June 25th, 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Plaza Club. And you can get tickets at hvca.org.
Sounds good.
Fantastic.
Sign up now.
Thank you, Melly, for joining us.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Bert.
And of course, next up, we want to welcome Dave Ratz from the Maui County Council, and he's here to tell us about the upcoming Hawaii State Association of Counties conference. Hey, Dave, what's going on over there?
Hello, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on. We're putting through our final preparations right now. I'm calling in from beautiful McKenna, Hawaii, where the conference actually kicks off tonight with some business meetings by the HSAC Executive Committee. And
right.
then we start bright early tomorrow morning on our conference theme for the next couple of days, why invest in the counties. And we're going to be looking at that both in terms of public infrastructure and investments by the local government and also private capital investments by the business sector and where those two things intersect. That's going to be a big part of the conference. So we're really looking forward to it and excited to have you here with us. And Bert.
That's right. I heard there's a guy named Bert Lum on your program.
Wow, what a coincidence.
That's amazing that would happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll hold the suspense till a little later. We can talk a little bit about that panel. But Dave, tell us, you know, this conference has been going on for a bunch of years, right? And I guess all the different counties sort of host it. This one's happening on Maui. Can you give us a little bit of the history behind the the State Association of Counties conference?
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to provide some background on that. HSAC was actually formed by the four county governments way back in 1959, and we've been having annual conferences just about every year since then. And basically, HSAC is the professional trade organization for the 34 council members and the four mayors throughout the state. So at these conferences, it provides an opportunity for local government officials to learn from each other. You know, we all face very similar issues and kind of see what's working and what's not working in our home counties. And we also bring in subject matter experts to try to get, you know, the best practices throughout Hawaii and on the mainland on the policy issues that face county governments.
Mm-hmm.
And then HSAC's other purpose is to give the counties a unified voice when we try to lobby the state and federal government.
Mm-hmm. And I guess what, Maui is hosting it this year. Where is it going to be next year?
Good question. It was hosted by City and County of Honolulu last year.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's Maui County. I think it's probably Kauai County's term next year, and then we're on to Hawaii County. So
mm-hmm.
we rotate. So the last time Maui County had the honor of hosting. It was back in 2011.
Mm-hmm. And most of the attendees are also from the counties. Is the do you have attendees from the general public? And what's sort of the breakup or the demographic of the attendees?
I would say roughly half are government officials or staff people from both the county governments and the state. And then we also have a lot of community leaders, representative of nonprofit organizations, business leaders who are also interested in some of the same issues that the council members are. So, And we do get people from all four counties, and it's a really diverse group. And it's kind of an exciting opportunity to get people together and try to figure out where there is common ground and common interest.
Well, Dave, I have one last question for you. I mean, this being a tech show and interest in technology, so I have to ask, what were you thinking when you invited Bert? What questions were you hoping to answer with Mr. Lum on the program?
Well, do you want to have Dave answer that? Or,
yes.
Okay, Dave, you now be very careful about how you answer that question.
You know, I actually met Bert for the first time, I believe, 2 years ago at the National Civic Day of Hacking event in Kakaako, and I've since seen him speak at Government Digital Technology Summit. And I think he is of the mindset that a lot of us in county government are now, that data-driven policy is really where we need to go to make sure that we're making decisions that reflect good information, the best information available out there. And he's actually working with the Maui County Council on an open data policy similar to what the state has right now. So we think it's a real coup to have Bert.
I do too.
Dave,
good
choice. I'm going to hire you as my publicist. You know, we got a great panel. I just want to plug our panel, because we have Todd Nakapoi, the CIO from the state. We have Mark Wong from the city and county. We also have Sean Nakamoto from the Board of Water Supply, and Peter Liu from MBloom. So they're going to all join me on the panel. Stay tuned for that on Friday.
So, Dave, if somebody wants to attend or is interested in learning more, where can they go for more information?
You can go to the council's website, mauicounty.us. You can still register, or you can come down to McKenna tomorrow morning and register on site.
Fantastic.
And you can follow us on social media with the hashtag HSAC2015.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dave, for joining us.
Thank you. See you soon, Bert.
Okay. Yes, thanks for calling in.
Take care.
And, of course, last but not least, we have Dave Hurwicz, and he's here to tell us about this F808 photo workshop happening this weekend. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you. It's actually a F808 Photo Hawaii Festival.
Festival, okay.
It follows many of the festivals, photo festivals that are happening around the country and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We are bringing together about 25 or 30 of the best photographers in Hawaii for a series of screenings, talks, panel discussions. We are going to be giving a Lifetime Achievement Award to photographer Franco Samaragi, who's giving a keynote talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first Lifetime Achievement Award that Pacific New Media is presenting. And we have a series of panel discussions roughly breaking down between fine art, editorial, and commercial photography. We have, in addition to photographers, photo editors, curators, people from the fine art world. It's turning out to be a very exciting day, and we've been very, very successful thus far with registration and the quality of the presenters that are coming.
You know, Dave, we like to feature Pacific New Media programs in general on our show. I mean, certainly there is a lot of technology. There is a lot of creativity and art in the photography program. I really enjoy your Contemporary Photography in Hawaii exhibit and how anybody can participate. And you have a mix from grizzled and experienced and professional lifelong photographers, and sometimes just casual photographers, and they can be side by side at times. But this festival, like you said, is kind of a new format for you, and you said it compares to other festivals. So what's the energy that you're looking to inspire here? If it's not an exhibition and it's not a workshop, what does the festival bring to it?
Well, this is the first time we're doing something like this, and I love the word grizzled. We're trying to bring together both the grizzled and the young. We're trying to bring together the whole community for people that have an interest, a passion for photography. And, of course, we don't have a lot of opportunity to get together except for gallery openings and things of the like. So we're seeing this as a way in which people can share. They can share work. They can share ideas. They can share equipment issues,
lenses.
We have vendor tables, so a number of vendors are going to be setting up. It's a little bit like a fair.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping for the energy of people, you know, a wide range of people.
So as a festival, you got vendors, you got booths, you got other, I guess I'm assuming you're going to have some presentations. Can you kind of describe overall what somebody would expect to experience once they attend this festival?
Well, they would see, first of all, a lot of photographs.
Okay.
We have a number of slide presentations. Even what we're calling panel discussions mm-hmm. are going to be accompanied by slides. Mm-hmm. So they're going to see the best of photojournalism. They're going to see the best of fine art photography. They're going to see a lot of commercial people showing their work and, of course, talking about the challenges and opportunities in Hawaii. They're going to see water photographers. We have a second keynote with Zach Noyle. And I have to say that
Surfer Magazine.
Surfer Magazine. However, Zach has been called to Indonesia for Surfer Magazine. So Rick Noyle, Zach's father, will be making that presentation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, this is very interesting because, you know, there are a lot of photographers. I know, you know, the last time we had you on, you were talking about a contest that you said I think had like more than 500 people apply.
We have a contemporary photography show every year, and we are now getting about 500 entries
right, so,
for 50 slots. In
so
that
a festival
show.
Like this, just sort of celebrating the photographer in all of us is something that we haven't seen in Hawaii.
You just gave us a great tagline,
there you
celebrating
go.
The photographer in all of us.
Hey!
No, okay. We haven't seen that in Hawaii, and that's why we're looking at this as a way for – you know, a lot of people to come together that may not even be photographers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was about mm-hmm. to say, as the husband of an avid iPhoneographer, or shall we say Instagramographer, you know, it sounds like the doors are open that wide that, you know, if she wants to, I mean, she might not know how to work with a large 50 to 200 lens or anything like that, but she still wants to learn about technique, about eye and color and contrast, so she could find something for her hair as well.
There's really going to be something for everybody. We have a panel on mobile technology, you know, and like I said, we're bridging many disciplines in photography. Photography is not just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the mobile revolution, photojournalism, documentary photography, there's diverse practice of fine art photography. So we're trying to really provide something for everyone, photographers and those interested in photography. I need to get in just before we close this up. The Lions Parade is happening in Waikiki this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
We just found that out. So people should enter the Halekulani on Kalia Road. Just remember Kalia Road because Kalakaua will be closed.
Okay.
But that sounds like there'll be something to photograph if you sneak out of the conference.
You got it.
Yes. So give us the details, where, when, and how can people sign up?
Halekulani Hotel, this Saturday, June 27th from 9 to 5. The website is f808photohawaii.com, and we will be accepting registrations on site.
Fantastic.
That's great. Sounds great. Thanks, Dave, for joining us.
You're very welcome.
And, of course, we'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be joined by Todd Cochran and Kimmy Morton to talk about the business of podcasting.
And, you know, anyone can create a podcast. Bert and I are evidence of that.
Yes,
but
that's true.
What does it take to make a living off of it? Of course, we'd love your thoughts or questions as part of that conversation. You can give us a call and ask the experts at 941-3689 or toll-free from the Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689.
And, of course, we're on Twitter, so you can tweet us your questions as well at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Why can't I bring it home? Hear the latest about sneaking plants and fruits into the state from your summer vacation and why it's more important than ever to follow the rules to protect our native habitat from needless harm. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 on The Conversation.
That debt crisis in Greece, yeah, it's getting ugly.
Physical threats, swearing, spitting, we have that in a daily basis.
And that's not even in the official negotiations either. I'm Kai Rizdahl from the streets of Athens, next time on Marketplace from APM.
This evening at 6, following Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Bush Consulting, Sacred Hearts Academy, and Hawaii Supply.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And joining us today is Todd Cochran and Kimmy Morton. Todd hosts the Geek News Central podcast, and he's also the CEO of Raw Voice, a media company that works with and represents 30,000 audio and video content creators.
Kimmy, meanwhile, turned a passion for personal development, jiu-jitsu, biohacking, and problem-solving into a podcast she launched with Pua Pakele and Cabot called Hot Better Pop.
I love that name. Now, how difficult is it to create and sustain a compelling podcast? I mean, we have our opinions, but we'd love to hear your comments and questions. And that number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. We want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you. Now, great to be here.
Todd, you know, I know we talked to you probably when we first started, Bite Marks Cafe, and I was so impressed that you had written the book on podcasting. And I want to get your, I guess, sense of the history of where podcasting has sort of come from and gotten to. I mean, maybe just start with, how would you say you first got into podcasting?
You know, what it really was I the story goes back to 2004. It seems like forever, but I was sitting in a hotel room recovering from a back injury and babysitting some airplanes while I was still active duty in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And I kind of heard, I couldn't go out because I was in this clamshell. It was 100 degrees in Texas. And
wow.
I heard about podcasting and I was already a blogger and thought, man, this is something I'd like to do. So I started a tech show and man, from there, it's amazing where it went from there.
Did you pick up the technical background from the work you were doing, or was that something that just was pretty easy to pick up?
We had to invent it. It didn't exist then. Okay. So now, compared to what we had to do before, you know, people, you say podcast, people look at you like you're from Mars. Now you talk about podcasting, they know what it is.
You know, later on, maybe we can get into some of the technical pieces and how it might have gotten from where it was, let's say, 10 years ago to what it's how easy perhaps it is to actually produce a recording. But, you know, we'll save that for a little later.
Well, our show is put out as a podcast, and I think that more and more savvy listeners know that they can get content on demand. But even today, when it's becoming mainstream, there's the argument over how you describe what it is we do and, you know, how to explain it to someone who is new to it. And
right.
I remember when we were getting started, and I think it was 2006, still fairly early days. Mm-hmm. And because you couldn't articulate it to a person you meant, I was like, it's internet on the radio. That's what it is.
The closest thing I would say is probably like, well, it's an MP3 and it's on the net. So just download it.
Go and get it. So is that part at least, do you still see a hurdle in bringing in the average person on the street and saying what you do?
No, because people have been trained in using DVR. So, you know, podcasting is the same way. It's on-demand audio. They can listen to it when they want on their schedule. Best thing is, and carry it around their mobile device. They don't have to worry about pre-downloading the show like we used to. They just, you know, bring it up, click play, and they can listen to the audio content. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, Kimmy, you're a relatively new podcaster, but we wanted to find out what possessed you to want to start your podcast, Hot Better Pop?
I have a co-host, Pua, and I. We've created Hot Better Pop together, and we've only been doing it for a few months now. And really, what started it was I'm a blogger and a writer, and I was finding that really the more efficient, I was finding it was like difficult to get as much information and sharing out there as I wanted to do. And so podcasting is a really great way to reach a lot of people in a very efficient manner. Plus, we love podcasting. Pua and I are both really big podcast fans. We listen to it all the time. So it made a lot of sense for us. You know, we basically have the conversations in podcast form that we want to be listening to. And it's just a great way to reach a really large audience in a super fun format.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, I consider myself a writer as well. And so when you think, oh, I'm going to be a blogger and I'm going to blog about what's – I've been trying to blog every day, and sometimes it's very, very hard. And the good thing, the exciting thing about podcasting was you naturally express yourself with your voice, or perhaps in a video. You sit in front of someone and talk to them. And so you're not necessarily moving periods, commas, creating paragraphs, moving sections around. And once, and a lot of people describe it as live to hard drive, right? Whatever comes out of my mouth, that's what's going out on the show. And you hone your ability to have a productive and informative conversation. In fact, being here on public radio, I think for Bert and I have been good in that way. When I started my podcast, I was editing out everything. I'm like, oh, I didn't like the way I said that there. I'm going to put something else in there. But now it's really kind of more of a natural view. And I think you're tapping in your ability as a public speaker, but with an audience.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah, I think that you can learn a lot from wherever you feel stuck in your life. So I was feeling very stuck trying to create a regular writing habit, trying to get my blogs out, trying to get my writing done. And so it was like, okay, well, why am I feeling stuck here? What would be a really creative solution? And podcasting was it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Todd, you talked a little bit how you had to make it up yourself. And I remember the early days, Adam Curry, Dave Weiner, payloads and XML.
Yep.
And all of that. It's surprising to me that there was still a thriving community back then. But now, how hard is it to get started?
You know, it's really you can podcast now via your mobile phone, record right from on the device itself. The technical part of getting started is sign up for a service. Oftentimes you can get going just from that. Because there's lots of podcasting services out there. The way I prefer to do it and where I suggest folks are thinking about getting started podcasting is get a WordPress site and get your own .com, build your own brand. There's some plugins out there that just you load into the WordPress site, and the people are like already rolling their eyes. They're listening to this. But it's really pretty simple. WordPress, PowerPress is the plugin. Start recording the content. Start publishing. It's pretty simple.
Right, and to get maybe an iTunes account, have your podcast be submitted and subscribed to on iTunes. I mean, and then once you do that, it's just a matter of marketing it, right? So you know, with the Hot Butter Pop, I mean, was the brand already there before you started podcasting? Or was it sort of a simultaneous build? And once you got the sort of the brand out there, what are some of the vehicles by which you would drive people to your podcast?
Sure. Well, it sort of happened simultaneously. And so we created everything all at the same time, sort of talked about what we wanted to be sharing. And we were looking for that right word that was going to capture it. And Hot Butter Pop was it. Mm-hmm. We found that, you know, it kind of captures everything. It's like we talk about everything from, you know, how to look and feel hot or how to get better at things, how to pop out of bed. And the words just sort of flowed together and they just sort of roll off the tongue.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's fun, which is we're definitely our energy behind the podcast is very light. It's very fun, and it pops. Mm-hmm. And Pua and I are lucky. We're trainers at Egan's Fit Body Bootcamp, so we have this audience already in a sense that we're talking to. And what we're finding is our passions go beyond just physical fitness. We're very much into the mental, emotional, spiritual fitness as well, and just creating a better life. And so this is a really great platform for us to be able to talk beyond just, you know, working out, eating better. What else? What else do you need to really get excited about your life? And so for us, we have automatically this following, thank goodness, through our members. And then podcasting is awesome because it's really word of mouth, the way things spread. So one person says, hey, did you hear this? And then, you know, that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that is certainly a challenge is finding your voice, finding a way to keep going. This is a tech show. Let me get into gear. Like, you meet a ham radio guy, and if he's a completely crazy ham radio guy, he's spent $10,000 at least on the right antennas, transmitters, cabling and everything. And I know that when people get into podcasting, just like actually when they get into blogging, they spend almost an inordinate or inappropriate amount of time in the setup. They're like, I have to have the best mics. I have to have the best recording equipment, and I have to have you know, soundproofing on my walls. And you spend 6 months preparing for it before you've actually sat down and recorded something. So, Todd, you have, in my view, one of the most advanced podcast studios out there, but you've been doing it for 10 years.
Right.
So what advice do you give to somebody, or even to Kimmy right here, and she's thinking, do I have the right mic? Am I using the right recording and editing platform? I mean, Where do you begin on that front in the technical setup of a podcast?
You know, we're really lucky today. Again, there's lots of ways you can get started very inexpensively. I started with a $7 LabTech headset. That's what I started with. And then I built my studio out. But my goal from a production standpoint was to be I'm married. I have kids. At the time, very young kids. My goal was to walk in the studio, record, and walk out. So I invested in my gear initially to be able to have great production from the get-go and not have to worry about spending too much time editing. So there's lots of resources out there today. You can even just Google podcasting gear, and companies have put together kits today that you can buy that are great starters. Some of them are more expensive than others. Again, the mobile phone, there's kits now where you can just record with your mobile device. There's an app called Boss Jock Studio that you can use for recording. Again, there's lots of ways to do it inexpensively. But the most important thing is have passion about what you want to do, and that's going to carry you much farther than buying an expensive mic.
Well, you know, I love hearing, Todd, your, you know, sort of setup. Speaking from a gearhead point of view, I mean, you know, of course you're going to have the best equipment. I'm kind of curious, Kimmy, when you started to podcast, were you approaching it in the same manner of looking for the best mic, looking for the best soundproofing, looking for the best mixing equipment? What did you put together?
Well, it's been a journey and it continues to be. So honestly, I started with Google and just started researching, you know, how to start a podcast. I think I literally typed that in. And there's so much information out there. And I went with what my budget could afford. And I, you know, there's a lot of scary stories out there of, oh my gosh, sound quality has to be perfect mm-hmm. or else you're going to turn all of your listeners off and no one's going to ever listen to you again. And I just, you know, as Todd said, like follow your joy. And if you find something that you're really excited about talking about, you're going to find a way to get it out there.
Can you share like what equipment you're
sure.
actually using?
Yeah. So I have a Shure digital mic that, mm-hmm. that I use that is sort of mid-range. I invest in that. And then we have another. So Pua uses more of a I forget exactly which one she uses, but it's more in the $50 range. Mine's closer to about a $300.
You guys have a mixer that you mix?
Actually, so this is interesting. We started recording in person, just sharing my Shure mic. Like, we wanted to get our word out there. So
you guys would, like pass the mic back?
Oh, we'd be in real close.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I know. We'd take pictures like, we can't believe this is happening. And we actually, we went to Happiness U, Alice Enoy's Happiness U.
Uh-huh,
She's
uh-huh.
a friend of mine. She said, oh, just you can use it. My classroom there, we found that it was very echoey, so we had some tech challenges there. So each time we kind of improve. We listen, we get feedback from people and say, okay, what can we do here? We actually now have been Skyping each other, believe it or not, and using call recorder. What we have found is with our schedules uh-huh. now, we can pick a few mornings, early morning, and just Skype call each other and use a software called Call Recorder and record it. Mm-hmm. And then I edit it in Adobe Audition. Mm-hmm. And that's the way we get it done now. But we are working towards creating our own podcast studio in my home.
Wow, that's great to hear.
We're talking to Todd Cochran, a veteran podcaster, CEO of Raw Voice, and host of one of the longest running podcasts out there, but also a tech podcast called Geek News Central, as well as Kimmy Morton, one of two co-hosts of the Hot Better Pop personal development podcast. And they are finding ways to have you express their independent voice and finding an audience. If you have a question, if you want to do the same thing, you can give us a call at 941-3689 or toll free from the Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. Now, Kimmy, as a personal developer, I'm sure you can appreciate the question I'm going to put to Todd, because just like when someone says they're going to start a blog and then spend 6 months picking a design and then writes three posts and then quits, it's one thing to say you're going to do it, and it's another thing to actually do it and to keep it going. You've been now running a podcast network, a service for thousands and thousands of people. What are you seeing? Do people stick it out? What's the average lifespan of a podcast?
It's kind of funny. The numbers haven't changed over the years. Typically, people get really excited. They're going to do a show. They get to about episode 7. They say, man, this is hard work. and they quit. And we lose about 50% of podcasters by episode 7. So don't buy the expensive gear until you get at least past 7, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And then And then you get to maybe 20 or 25 episodes, and we lose maybe 50% of that
remaining
50%. Mm-hmm. If you get past that, you probably make it a couple of years. Now,
Kimmy, where are you?
We just recorded 13.
Okay. You're past seven. That's good.
But I can really count on one hand, maybe two hands, the number of podcasts that started with me back in 2004. But it's people change shows. They go for a couple years. They get tired of a topic. They'll change to a brand. You know, maybe they'll rebrand and relaunch. So there's lots of ways to stay current and stay active. My whole thing about the podcasting space to begin with is I was going to stop when it quit being fun. And my ohana, my audience, I call them my ohana. Obviously living here in Hawaii, that has some strong meanings. But my audience is my family that I reach out to twice a week and talk to them and share information with. So they keep me going, their comments back and their feedback. So it's been an incredible ride, 1,040 episodes. Who would have ever
– That's incredible. That's,
yeah, who would have ever thought?
How many shows have we done here?
350-something.
We're amateurs.
You know, wow. We've been doing this close to 7 years now, so I think we've actually passed a little of that threshold.
Yeah,
but
maybe
that's
we're
right.
in it for the long
yeah,
haul.
Yeah, but I guess for both of you, I want to hear – and Todd, you kind of touched on it. I mean, you got the fall off after seven. If you make it past 25, you know, you're doing pretty good. But Kimmy, I mean, what is it that's going to keep you doing this past 20, past 50? Maybe, you know, you get up to 300 like us or 1,000 like Todd. I mean, is there something that you're looking for that kind of gives you the feedback, that gives you the incentive to keep going? Because, you know, when we've done this show, you know, we've got the benefit of Hawaii Public Radio and, you know, we get the frequent, hey, your voice sounds familiar kind of, you know, response. And, you know, that's kind of an incentive, and I think we've done good for the tech community. What is it that you're looking for that will keep you going?
Sure. Well, I think it's the same things. I think we're driven by the fun of it. We really enjoy the process, and we just – it's a lot of fun just talking and talking about things we want to be talking about. Mm-hmm, we're passionate about the content. That helps a lot. But, yeah, we do shout-outs in every episode because getting listener feedback is amazing. And, you know, podcasting is a weird thing. You're sort of just putting your voice out there. You don't know who's like, you see your downloads, but you don't really know who's listening. And so to get that in-person feedback or to see an iTunes review or to have somebody reach out to you on Facebook, it just means the world to us and it fuels our fire.
I see. Yeah, the feedback is really important, right? I mean, the interaction that you might get from your ohana or your audience, I mean, that's really crucial.
Sometimes the ohana can be pretty tough. So I've gotten feedback before that was cringeworthy.
Cringeworthy.
but I've always read all of my listener feedback unless they ask, positive and negative. And then I address if it's a negative feedback, I address the negative feedback. And sometimes
you mean on the show?
On the show, yeah. And sometimes it's good advice. You know, they'll kick me a little bit and say, hey, you were doing something and this is annoying me. And I look back in retrospect and say, yeah, they're right.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
That's one thing good, too, about having an audience that really cares for you. They'll support you in the good times and the bad times. They know when you're up and when you're down. And believe me, after doing that many episodes, you can't be 100% for 1,000 episodes, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
But the audience itself keeps things going.
Well, yeah, I do want to ask you something because I mean, I've done what you've described. I had a podcast, and I said, well, this was kind of interesting. Here's another topic.
Right.
That podcast blew up, changed my life.
Yep.
And then I said, well, now that TV show is over, and I'll do another podcast, right? So I'm changing channels, I'm changing formats. I went from a weekly to a daily format that nearly killed me, and
that's
probably why I stopped.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's important, I think, and you can speak to this, is consistency.
Right.
That if you say, you know what, I'm going to put out a podcast when I have time, and then you start maybe every week, and then you miss a couple of weeks, and then it's, all right, well, it's a monthly podcast, right? You need to be consistent, I think, if you're going to succeed. Would you agree?
My wife is a saint. Every Monday and Thursday night for the past 10 years have been blocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's a funeral, wedding, graduation, kids in a hospital, there's no show. But otherwise, every Monday and Thursday night. And that's when I record, and the show's released the next morning. And if I'm not there, the audience says, where were you? Then they're worried about me. They think something's happened.
But that works for you because maybe someone would say that works for you because you're a regimented person. You have that discipline. But is it how much does that play in the size of your audience, the success of your podcast?
It's absolutely essential because, Ryan, you know the show comes out Tuesday morning. You build me into your life because you know my show's coming out Tuesday morning. If I come out on Wednesday, you're listening to someone else. Mm-hmm. So the reason I stay on an exact schedule is because they built their listening into their me into their lives.
That's absolutely right. I'm thinking of the podcast I listen to. I know what I'm going to be listening to on Monday, on Wednesday, because those two shows come out. Kimmy, are you sticking to?
Wait. I want to hear the secret. I want to hear, Kimmy, your secrets to podcasting, but we're going to hold that thought.
Oh.
We're going to hold that thought. This is the teaser. We're going we'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with Todd Cochran and Kimmy Morton about the business and the secrets of podcasting.
And what are some of the best ways to find listeners, grow your listenership, and maybe make some money? If you've got a question, and I think we've got at least one, call 941-3689 or from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. This is White Marks Cafe.
Blind Willie Johnson and Big Bill Brunsey, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. Hear the stories behind these names and the music that became known as the Delta and Chicago Blues. Rick Smith and the Trailer Park Romeos school you in all things blues in the Atherton Studio, Saturday, June 27th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at hprtickets.org or call 955-8821 during business hours.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Dr. Laura Basha, and I'm the author of The Inward Outlook. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the things we can't talk about.
Sunday morning at 11.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I am Ryan Ozawa, and we're talking to Todd Cochran and Kimmy Morton about the business of podcasting.
And, of course, you can give us a call here, and that number is 941-3689 on Oahu, or 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. We want to welcome Andrea from Honolulu to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Sure. And what's your question?
Oh, yes. I was wondering how, I guess, you get more listeners and expand your audience and sort of get more exposure for your podcast.
That is an excellent question. And, you know, we were right about to get into the secrets that Kimmy might want to share with us. So we'll have her throw that in as well. Kimmy, I mean, what do you think? I mean, what do you do to grow your audience? I mean, I know you said that you have sort of a built-in audience, but how do you expand beyond that?
Well, I think I always keep coming back to love what you're talking about, because when you love what you're talking about, then you talk about it everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And it's podcasting spreads in a very word of mouth type of way. So that helps. We're also working on sharing content via our blog. So, you know, making sure that you have a website where people can find you, maybe sharing other content besides just your podcast. We're also working on submitting content to other blogs and reaching out to other podcasters, kind of networking in that way. Mm-hmm. So kind of, joining forces with other people.
Sounds good. And Todd?
It's going to kind of mirror that a little bit. I was a blogger first and a podcaster second, so I understood the value of blogging. So today, on non-podcast days, there are blog posts going up. Now, I'm fortunate enough now that I've got writers that write for my site and keep the content going. Believe it or not, Google drives me an incredible amount of traffic to my website every day from search engine traffic, and a percentage of those folks subscribe. A percentage of those folks stay on and stay subscribed after a few shows. But that is one way. But again, social media, one of the big things I do every year is I go to the Consumer Electronics Show. I do a tech show. Mm-hmm. So I go to where content is that I can create so that I create extra content to attract new listeners. So that has been – I call that the gift that keeps on giving, is that content I do at CES, mm-hmm. where we've done nearly 2,000 interviews over 8 or 9 years. That helps grow the audience. But after 10 years, you really have to work to continue to grow the show. But we still see growth month to month.
And I would say, adding to that, that, you know, when you're talking about promoting yourself, one, that's fairly narrow way to look at it. Two, people don't respond necessarily positively to that.
Right.
But when you consider yourself part of a community, whether it's tech fans or in my case, Lost television show TV fans, and you kind of take that lens up bigger and you go to events, that's what started me going to Comic-Con. And I would say that helped a lot too, because they're like, you become a reporter on the scene, but I'm just a regular geek. I'm not CNN at Comic-Con.
Right.
I am Ryan the Dork at Comic-Con. And some people, for whatever reason, find that compelling. So being a part of that broader conversation is key.
Now,
before the break, we were asking about the consistency. And Todd, you said it's absolutely key because people need to say, hey, Wednesday night is when I watch Lost. Thursday afternoon is when I listen to the podcast about Lost. But as a personal trainer, you probably also have another way of thinking about why doing something on a regular basis is important.
Well, first of all, being a podcast fan, I already had that appreciation of wanting that episode to be there. So I was a big Transmission fan. Oh, my gosh. And I would have cried if your show wasn't there on, you know, the morning after Lost. I would have cried. And so I think I already, as a podcast listener, had that built in. But for me, I don't like to feel stressed. I don't like to feel rushed. I don't like necessarily the pressure of deadlines. So and neither does Pua. So what the two of us do is we make sure that we record well in advance, have sort of a bank of episodes there so that we're not feeling that pressure. We use a tool like Buffer to make sure that our social media posts go out without us having to do it. So that we have an episode that comes out every Tuesday, but we're not in panic mode every Monday because we've preset everything, even our blog posts, everything is scheduled out ahead of time.
Smart.
What do you think about the aspect of live versus recorded? I mean, so if you have a bank of podcasts, are they being live streamed while you're doing it, or are you sort of polishing it up, doing the edits, and then releasing it? And then as you decide that that's the method of production, do you ever wrestle with, you know, live versus recorded?
Well, we don't do a whole lot of editing, but there have been times where we felt like, yeah, you know, it feels like right now that this episode should come first. And so while we may have some scheduled out, we'll record something that's top of mind for us, because that authenticity is really important to us. And if something is a burning topic for us and we feel very passionate about it, we'll bump that up and say, no, this feels right to us. Do we think about doing a live show? Oh, I don't know. This makes me a lot more nervous than the nice edited cozy show that we get to do.
I guess for us, I mean, we're so used to the live thing. I could barely think of, you know, doing it recorded because...
Well, Todd, your show, when you're recording it, people can watch you record
right,
it, right?
Right, but, you know, I record at 8 p.m. Hawaiian Standard Time, so...
It's a little late.
The rest of the world is asleep. But I started live largely because I kind of got bored of doing just the show. And also, I added the video component to it for insane reasons. And that's when the studio really exploded. But I like the live portion because it makes you a better content creator. If you make a mistake, too bad. It's there. It's out. It's gone. So you have to be more prepared when you're doing the show being live.
Well, you know, Ryan and I are both big fans of, you know, This Week in Tech and Leah Laporte and the whole, you know, slew of podcasts that, or actually videocasts that they do. And they've always talked about live and sort of this element of spontaneity and being there while it's happening. And of course, you know, they have the sort of the chat room on the side. I mean, is there an element of live that you agree with, you know, having the ability to experience whatever is being conveyed while it's actually happening?
Well, I think live is great, and if you have that audience feedback and you do your show at a time where you can have a lot of people that are watching, it's great. But Leo's also has recently learned about the hazards of doing live and not having phones that were stage phones versus personal phones. So there is a danger in exposing your entire life on a live show. So you have to be careful on what you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, Bert and I experimented with live casting. And after a couple of embarrassing episodes, I said, maybe this is not as much fun as I thought it would be. Well, this is great. This is a passion. This is a hobby. This is something we love to do. But at some point, you might ask, or maybe a spouse might ask, or a business partner might ask, where's the money? So, Kimmy, you're 20, coming up on 20 shows in. certainly it's augmenting what you currently do as a trainer and such, but do you see your podcast as a revenue generating opportunity?
Well, I was hoping you're going to go to Todd first so I could find out. No, absolutely. We definitely, I think we started this as a passion, but of course the question of monetization comes up. And while we are looking at ways to monetize the podcast, I think originally we had thought, oh, okay, well, it's going to be sponsorships. And I think that's what you think of when you think of podcasts. But actually, we're finding that our biggest goal right now is to build our audience, because we're basically building our niche. We're building a tribe of followers that we hope trust us and love what we do. And then any content that we do create, any products that we have, we already have this pre-filtered audience that we can directly market to. So, mm-hmm. So that's part of it. And we'd only be sharing things that we think that they would enjoy.
Right.
But we are definitely interested in also the podcast sponsorships and other ways to monetize the podcast.
So how does the sponsorship model work? Is it advertising, or are you, let's say, getting the sponsors that you then maybe talk about their product? I mean, how does that work?
Well, it depends on how many downloads you have, how many listeners. And so I'm sure Todd can talk a lot more about that. But you have to build a certain following at first to, mm-hmm. to make you appealing to sponsors. And then you share whatever product they have on your podcast. But I know for one thing, it's going to be really important to us that we are in alignment with anything that we do share, because we're not interested in sponsorship just for sponsorship's sake.
Well, you know, what Kimmy's doing with her show is what a lot of podcasters are doing. It's a new trend. She's building a group of folks that are following her, and she'll be developing product maybe on her own. And then with that, she'll start to have folks reach out to her. But traditionally, what's been happening is host-endorsed type sponsor spots that you would like hear on a national talk show where the host talks about a product. Some of those same exact sponsors are also sponsoring in the podcasting space, and it's a direct response type of advertising. The national advertisers are starting to advertise in the space little by little. That's kind of the holy grail. That's when the big money comes. But you know, we've been very successful in doing direct response. My sponsor, GoDaddy, who I've had for 10 years now, every show I do a direct response advertising for them. And I have to meet a certain number of quota a month. And, you know, they've been very good to me, and I cannot complain. We do campaigns that are generally a quarter long. You know, some of the big ones have lately been Casper. They do mattresses. Anything you hear on the radio today doing direct response is almost in podcasting. And it's paid on a cost per thousand basis, and typically $20 to maybe $40 CPM. I'll be honest and say that maybe the highest deals we've done in the last couple of years are 20 and 25. That seems to be the number. So when you're talking about that type of dollars, you have to have a pretty big show to make a lot of money.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you're getting paid $20 or $25 per 1,000 listeners. So sometimes it doesn't make sense for a small show to do something like that. So maybe more smart for what Kimmy's doing, building her brand, getting her tribe built, and then deciding how she's
right.
Gonna...
I have a line of yoga pants I want to sell, and I listen to Kimmy's show, and I think her listeners would like my product.
I would love to see you in some yoga pants.
Thank you, Bert. Well, so you talk about CPMs. I know that my last podcast did very well, and so I was able that's actually how I funded my wife and my trip to Comic-Con.
Right,
the show paid for it, so it was perfect. But so now I have to ask. I mean, you of course have been successful, and it is a living that you make, but. For most people, are we talking about maybe just sort of throwing around money a month, or are we seeing more full-time, self-sustaining, this is what I do for a living podcasters?
It runs the gamut. The average podcast in America today is still 3,000 to 5,000 listeners per episode. So you can kind of do the math. If you do 8 shows, that's 40,000. You do the multiplier, you know, that's maybe car money. Maybe that's your car payment, or maybe that's a house payment, or – you know, it all depends on – some people only make gas money. Some people make go out to dinner money. Some people make money.
Right.
I mean, make some serious six-figure incomes.
So, Todd, I mean, what you're describing, and I think I want to hear from Kimmy as well, as a independent podcaster, you're not only creating the content. You have to go out there and sell your podcast if you're going to get advertisers or sponsors to participate on your podcast. Is that something, Kimmy, that you're also branching out into, the advertising, the being the salesperson for your Hot Bitter Pop?
I don't necessarily think of it as selling. I think of it as sharing and sharing on a bigger and bigger level and just being driven by the passion and the fun behind it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough.
When you think about a website, you know, you might try to sell direct ads, and I will do that periodically, but it's actually easier just sort of slap a piece of code there from Google and they pay a tiny little amount.
Right,
but it does
right,
all
right,
they
right.
do all of the selling for
right.
But does that kind of model exist in podcasting?
It does a little bit. Some folks are doing affiliate type stuff that they just get from Commission Junction, or they maybe do an Amazon affiliate type deal. Those are tougher. Mm-hmm. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
Some podcasters actually make a podcast ad to that affiliate deal. They do their own thing to create.
Oh, drive traffic to
drive traffic to that.
But Todd, so tell me, your model is interesting because you're selling for all the people that are on your network, right?
Right.
So
right.
when you're going out there to the potential sponsor, mm-hmm. whatever, you're actually offering that to whoever's on your network, and the network guys who participate with you are recipients of that revenue
right.
stream as well, right?
Well, what they normally it goes down. I get a call from an advertiser. We want to do an ad buy. This is who we're trying to reach. I go and pull the shows to figure out which ones are going to be the best fit. I put a RFP together for them. That's a proposal. Submit it to them. They approve the shows. We do a contract, and then we launch the advertising deal. And then we offer that to the shows that we've the advertiser has pre-approved.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That could be 5. That could be 500. And then that goes for the period of the campaign. Once it's done, then we take
just
care of all the reporting
so
and writing.
So would
check.
It be safe to say that if I am a small startup podcast and I want to jump in on a network that already exists that has the infrastructure to do sponsorships
right.
and sales and advertising, I might consider doing it with Raw Voice?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, the best thing to do is just list your show at blueberry.com. And the best thing about our model, and that's blubrry.com,
mm-hmm.
is that we only ask the permission to try to sell one ad into your content. We still want the content creator to have full control of their show and try to get their own sponsors on their own at the same time. But we just ask the right to try to sell one ad into their show. They have the right of refusal.
Mm-hmm.
If I bring Kimmy an advertiser, she says, man, that doesn't fit. She can say, Todd, no, sorry, we don't want to participate in that one. So
mm-hmm.
that's how we really kind of operated on a scale that we don't push. We want to have good alignment. We want the advertisers to be happy. We want the podcasters to be happy. And the advertisers are finding out now there's a lot more smaller shows than big shows.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I can't believe how quickly we've run through this hour. Todd's been very successful and someone that I hope that we come back for the next podcast, State of Podcasting Conversation, in another 10 years. But Kim.
No, not that long.
Now, we've had, like as I mentioned at the start of the show, we've had real podcasts go mainstream from Serial to Barack Obama appearing on a podcast recorded in a garage. So what is your dream for that? Where will you know that I have made it as a podcaster? What do you see when you close your eyes and go, Kimmy Morton, professional podcaster who blank? What is that accomplishment?
Well, we have already as a company a few markers. One is going to be when we make that first dollar as a podcast for sure. And I think being recognized by somebody that we don't already know.
That would be fantastic.
Sounds great. So Hot Bitter Pop, that's where we can find you.
Yep, hotbitterpop.com.
Raw Voice.
GeekNewsCentral.com is where my show's at.
And Blueberry.
And blueberry.com, blubrry.com.
We'll definitely put that up
yeah.
on our show notes tonight. Todd Cochran is the CEO of Raw Voice, and Kimmy Morton is the founder of Hot Bitter Pop. And we want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll once again talk to the latest winners of Startup Weekend Honolulu.
And if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, email us at feedback@bitemarks.org. And of course, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Bite Marks.
And you can follow me at Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chong, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Koslovich.
And we leave you with our song pick of the week. Here's a band called Calexico and a song called Falling from the Sky. And that's money. No. See you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.